All right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast. My name is Keith, here alone without my buddies John and Chuck, who will be back very soon. For any newer listeners or people who haven't caught on yet, we've been labeling the podcasts like Season 2, Episode 41, to let you guys know that would be a full canon official show with John, Chuck, and myself. And then these other ones, we were calling them special, but then it looked too long in iTunes to read. But so the ones that don't have the season episode number, they're more of these interviews that might be a little drier, or hopefully not always drier, but just more, I guess, typical interview basketball only stuff. So we hope that's clear to you, and we thank you guys all for tuning in and listening to them. But just make sure you are subscribing on whatever podcast delivery system you're using to make sure you don't miss anything. And once again, once the regular season starts, we will have one full show every week with John, Chuck, and myself, and then probably some form of other show. And we might mess around with that format. I don't necessarily want to keep doing just a typical interview for those extra shows. But anyway, it's just part of some new things we hope to try this season, which is coming up so close. Things we are going to try that I know we're late, but we're going to have a listener fantasy league, so pay attention for that. We're going to do a picks league that I think might go monthly, where we will be giving away some Fan Essentials prizes. And we also have some other stuff planned, so make sure you, again, follow us on Twitter at Fast Break Break or on Facebook so you hear about all those new developments. And we want to keep people informed when we do our Rabble watch parties and our Rabble events online. And again, Nashville people for the Grizzlies watch parties. So we have a lot going on, a lot planned, and we hope you will be a part of it. All right, today's interview is with Audie Joseph from the Sporting News, all about the Charlotte Hornets, a team that surprised last year, and I think some people are now sleeping on them coming into this season. Of course, I thought they would be awful last season, so who knows? Anyway, before we get to the interview, I want to tell you about Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a subscription service that offers a range of geek, gamer, and pop culture items for less than $20 a month. The October theme is horror, and your box will contain collectibles from The Walking Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Halloween. So make sure you head to lootcrate.com/fastbreak and enter code FASTBREAK to save $3 off any new subscription today. Also, if you are looking for more NBA content and another NBA podcast, I recommend the Drive and Dish podcast from Jacksonville, Florida. Here's a little bit more about them.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafews.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
My guest today is the deputy editor for the Sporting News, Mr. Audie Joseph. Audie, how are you doing?
I'm good, Keith. How are you?
Doing great. I appreciate you doing this. We had it scheduled before, and then my internet was out. Felt very embarrassed. As much as I hate Comcast, normally our internet's pretty good. But so thanks for doing the makeup. Now, Audie, you live in Charlotte. While you do cover the whole gamut of sports, you live in Charlotte. That's right.
Yeah, and I do cover the Charlotte Hornets pretty regularly. I don't want to say all their home games, but most of their home games, including their first home preseason game. And so I'm pretty familiar with the team over the last year and a half since I've moved here, and it's been a good time, I guess, to cover the Hornets.
Are they your favorite team, or you just happen to be there?
I don't really have a favorite team.
Okay.
I didn't even have a favorite team before. It's not one of those things where you know, like a lot of journalists, I didn't try to not have a favorite team. The truth is, my favorite player growing up was Sam Cassell, and he bounced around so much that I never really stayed attached to a team. I just rooted for Sam Cassell's team.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And as a result, I can't really explain why I like Sam Cassell so much.
It's the dance, right? It's got to be the dance.
It started with the Rockets before the dance.
Okay, well, sure.
So,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I liked him because I knew correctly, I think, very young me made an accurate assessment that Sam Cassell was a lot better than Kenny Smith and deserved to start.
yeah. That's a good eye.
And so, yeah, he then went to the Nets, and I lived in New York City at the time. So that all led to me liking Sam Cassell and not really nailing down a team. But the Charlotte Hornets are definitely the team I've covered the most. I lived in D.C. before this, so I covered the Wizards somewhat regularly, but I've now covered probably 40 home games for the Hornets and pretty familiar with the team, so I'm looking forward to talking about them.
Yeah. Well, actually, before we dive firmly into the Hornets, since you are a national writer, I wanted to bring up one storyline which I felt like kind of slipped away, and I feel like it might have slipped away on purpose. I think the NBA announced it on Sunday during NFL football games. The Darren Collison suspension. So like 2 weeks ago or so, they announced he was suspended for 8 games and for domestic violence, where he pleaded guilty, did a plea bargain for a domestic violence incident. Did you think that penalty was light? Because I was really surprised that it was only 8 games, because a former Charlotte player, Jeffrey Taylor, had been suspended 24 games, to me looked like a similar incident. So do you have any insight into that, or did you hear anything why it was only 8 games? And
yeah, I think first of all, the NBA is very, very, very big on making each punishment highly specific to both the player and the case.
Uh-huh.
So with Darren Collison, you had a player who has a pretty good reputation around the league. You also had a case where I believe it was his wife or a longtime girlfriend. She, you know, certainly I don't know all the details, but I do know the NBA felt very confident that this was a serious issue, but not the same degree of violence and not the same degree of a player having a series of problems the way Jeffrey Taylor did.
Yeah.
More than anything, and I can't 100% speak to what exactly they found, but more than anything, I believe Darren Collison's clean record and clean history played a role in that. Certainly, if he were to get in trouble again, the penalty would be significantly sharper, specifically if it's related to domestic violence. And I think it would be it should be noted before I even, you know, try to justify this too much. I would say it should be noted that the NBA used to be extremely lax on domestic violence. All sports were. In fact, our sports conversation was extremely lax about domestic violence until really Ray Rice. And I think Ray Rice really changed the conversation in a lot of ways that are really good and have sports fans realizing that some sports fans realizing that women should be respected and that, you know, for athletes, this is a particularly important situation because we're talking about elite level athletes who are both very large and very strong and very wealthy as well. So I think in that regard, it's interesting to see the change, because Lance Stevenson was arrested for domestic violence charges and didn't even get punished before his rookie season.
Right. And I wondered if that was he wasn't under the, you know, because he wasn't in the NBA yet type of thing. Yeah. But I know there's been a lot of guys arrested that the cases ended up being dismissed.
Yeah. And so, I know I just pulled up a list. That's what I was looking for, that I remember Jason Richardson having a domestic violence charge. He was convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence, the same thing that Collison was convicted of.
Yeah.
His suspension was 3 games.
Right.
So I do think, you know, the NBA has really pushed that they are taking these case by case. They probably found reason to believe that Darren Collison's infraction was not as serious as some others. But I don't think that they're making an excuse for it.
Yeah.
I certainly would expect that the NBA would react differently in a different circumstance with a greater issue. So
yeah.
I think I think that's the best way I can explain it, is that a lot of these penalties are very largely based on who the man is and how they defend themselves.
That makes sense. I know in the Jeffrey Taylor, there was a lot of like property damage, destruction, and other outside drinking behaviors that were an issue. But also, again, a conspiracy theorist me thought that the 8 games, maybe they went low so the Players Association wouldn't appeal, so it would just be over. It would be announced on an NFL Sunday, and then we could move on to promoting the sport of basketball. But that's just I'm a conspiracy guy. But anyway, let's move on to something a little more fun, which is the Charlotte Hornets. Last year on our preseason podcast, I predicted them to be horrible. Like, I really thought they were going to be bad. But they came into the preseason preaching we're gonna play with more pace. We're gonna shoot more threes, and which is to me just, you know, the platitudes everyone says coming into the preseason. But then they actually, again, preseason results. I remember they were playing those games against the Clippers overseas, I think in China, and they put up like 130 in 2 consecutive games. And I was like, this is not the slow down Charlotte Hornets. So they ended up winning 48 games last year. What was your recollection of the team last year and transitioning into a fast-paced team that ended up having that level of success? What was your recollection of that season?
Yeah, I think you nailed it, that it's pretty unusual to see a team, say, throw out all those platitudes about wanting to change their entire style and then actually go out and do it.
Yeah.
And my personal preseason prediction, before Michael Kidd-Gilchrist got hurt, I was somewhat optimistic. I said around 38-40 wins. That they would be in the race for the number 8 seed. And then Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who I still to this day believe is their most talented player, he got hurt early in the preseason, more than a year ago. And they knew he would be out for most of the season. And I thought that would drop their win total by almost 10 wins, just because of the way they were gonna have to start PJ Hairston, who's not a good basketball player.
I'm a Grizzlies fan. I saw him.
Yeah, he's not a very good basketball player, and it wasn't clear what Jeremy Lin's role was going to be at the time in the preseason, and there were all these other issues, and it turned out, for a team that dealt with a lot of injuries, when you consider that they had one of their 2 or 3 best players, if not their best player, miss 75 games, when you consider that Al Jefferson was out or limited for almost the whole season, that, you know, just about every important player they had missed some time, the fact that they won 48 games is really remarkable, and it's a testament to Steve Clifford basically saying, we need to play differently, so we'll play differently, period. That was the end of the discussion, and they did it, and the results were obvious.
Yeah, it blew me away because, again, as a Grizzlies fan, my favorite team has said that every training camp for the last 3 years, you know, like, oh, we're going to do it different. And then, like, it's not different. You get to, like, 1 or 2 games, but they really transformed it. And you see, like, Jeremy Lin was, again, coming from the Lakers, where no one was expecting much from him. Nick Batum was traded for Gerald Henderson and Noah Vonleh, and, like, he had a pretty bad season in Portland. So I guess it was a perfect storm. And it was, again, on the back of Steve Clifford gets a lot of the credit. Then you had Kemba Walker, who seemed to make a leap. Like, he suddenly drastically improved his field goal percentage. His 3-point percentage went way up. His finishing around the bucket went way up. Like, he was one of those reasons I didn't have much confidence in the Hornets, because I was like, he's kind of their best player, and I don't think they can win with that. But he totally proved me wrong last year. So all that is a prologue to say, last year went really well. You got absolute great career years out of Kemba Walker. You got Jeremy Lin, Marvin Williams, Nick Batum, all were great. So how much, obviously Jeremy Lin's gone, but how much of those other guys do you think they can carry over the performances from last year? And do you think they can repeat similar success this season?
Well, I think Kemba's age suggests that last year was a growing up year for him, not a fluke. I don't know that he'll be quite as efficient, but I do think he learned a lot. He has grown quite a bit as a player and as a person in his time in the NBA. And what he learned on the court was very obvious, which is, I'm not all that good at at isolation basketball, and I'm not all that good at shooting threes off the dribble. And what Nick Batum allowed him to do was to rarely play isolation. What Nick Batum and Cody Zeller, who had a very underrated season last year, Cody Zeller basically was there to give him a screen on every possession. Not having Al Jefferson hurt them in some ways, but it gave Cody a lot of time, and Cody was more natural on a pick, in a screening role. That kind of opened up Kemba to never have to play isolation. If you go and watch the Hornets last year, Kemba Walker rarely got left out in isolation modes. Nick Batum sometimes did, but Kemba was allowed to play off picks almost all the time. And the second part was Batum is a great passer who actually led the team in assists, and he really allowed Kemba to operate off the ball to set himself up for his 6 3-pointers a game, in which he shot 37% on those threes, which was easily a career year for him. And without Nick's passing and without all those screens and all that on and off ball screens that they set, I don't think that they go from the worst shooting team in the league to the eighth best that took the fourth most attempts. And though that's a drastic increase, and they shot 36% from three last year. I don't know if all of that is going to carry over. I do think Marvin Williams seems likely to take a step backward more than any other player on the team. But I think that there was a lot of duplicable success there, and they're excited about this season for a lot of reasons. But the biggest one is they feel like they're returning a very similar roster plus Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and they played some of their best basketball when Kidd-Gilchrist was on the court.
Yeah, so obviously they didn't bring in much as far as new talent onto the team. Like, you got the Marco Bellinelli coming in a borderline controversial trade. Some people saying the Kings, you know, the only trade the Kings have won in like 5 years or so. Actually, what's your take on that? Do you think the Kings won that trade? Because they traded the 22nd pick for Marco Bellinelli, which made most people scratch their heads with, like, what is Charlotte doing? So where do you come down on that trade?
I think Marco is a talented, very specific role player. And it is a role that, with Courtney Lee gone, they need a shooter. And the big thing for Marco is last season was just awful. But he was on the Kings.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I tend to think that players are worse when they're on the Kings.
Yeah.
Kind of scares you about what DeMarcus Cousins might be somewhere else.
Right. But, yeah. No doubt.
You know, it's pretty hard to imagine Marco Bellinelli shooting 30% from three again. He was at or above 37% every season except one before last season. So here's a 38% career three-point shooter who last season shot 30.6%.
Yeah.
I tend to think he's going to go back to around 38-39%.
But then I also weigh it on, like, well, he was on the Spurs that make everyone look great. So then he's on the Kings, make everyone look bad. So maybe it's in the middle.
He was kind of underrated on the New Orleans Hornets.
Right,
When he was there. So he was kind of underrated there. If you're asking me in a vacuum, do I think trading a first rounder for Marco Bellinelli was a good move? Absolutely not. I think it was a bad move in a vacuum.
Yeah.
For a team that needed the wing help and could not wait for a player to develop, because they view right now as an extremely important time for the Charlotte Hornets. They just paid a lot of money to Marvin Williams and Nicholas Batum, and those guys are not going to get any better with time. So I think they realize that right now is an important spot in their development as a franchise. They wanted to be good this year. They wanted to guarantee that they took a step forward instead of a step backward. And in that limited vacuum, in which a three-point shooter was necessary, a bench wing was necessary, and you're trying to win right now, they got more in Marco Bellinelli than I think they would have out of the 22nd pick this year. So financially, I don't like it.
Right.
In a lot of ways, I don't like it. But I think it kind of makes sense for what they're doing.
Well, so if Bellinelli can replace some of that value or that play that Courtney Lee was giving, then the big loss is Jeremy Lin, but then you're getting Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Is there any way that getting Kidd-Gilchrist back this year that that will compensate for how weak the bench unit looks and the fact that they can't probably do, like, those two guard units, like Kemba Walker, Jeremy Lin was a big weapon that it seemed like the Hornets used a lot. And I don't see Ramon Sessions doing the same thing because he can't shoot. So do you think, does that make sense? Like, does losing Jeremy Lin but gaining Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, are they going to reassess the depth or move some people around where they won't miss a beat on offense?
You know, I like Jeremy Lin a lot, but he couldn't shoot last year. Okay. And he'd admit it. He did admit it frequently. Jeremy's value on offense was his ability to drive. And that's pretty much what Ramon Sessions is good at.
Yeah.
Sessions played for Steve Clifford with Kemba Walker. They really like him here. And they knew Jeremy was going to be priced out of their range. They knew that. There was no question that someone was going to offer him at least $10 million a year. I think he got 12. And so knowing that you can't bring Jeremy Lin back, they got a player who offensively can do some of those things. The bigger issue is going to be defensively, because Kemba is a very scrappy, hard-working defender, but he's small. He's very small. In fact, if you met Kemba Walker, you'd probably be like, man, I knew you were small, but and everyone has that reaction the first time they actually walk up and stand shoulder to shoulder to him. He's listed, I think, at 6'1", but when you're standing next to him with his very petite frame, he almost comes across like he's 5'11", 5'10". He's small. He works very hard on defense, but he can't guard shooting guards. And Ramon Sessions can't really guard shooting guards, or Ramon Sessions can't really guard anyone. So that's where I think they're going to really miss Lin. But that's where Kidd-Gilchrist is when he's at full health, when he's been at full health for the last three seasons, which is almost never.
Right.
But when he is at healthy context, he's one step down from Kawhi Leonard in terms of lockdown, shutdown, three to four position defensive player who really devotes all of his effort onto that end. That's what he cares about. He wants to be the best defender in the league, and he doesn't care much about the other stuff. So I think in that sense, they should take a step up. The big thing that they're going to need out of Kidd-Gilchrist, that they've always needed out of Kidd-Gilchrist, is just the ability to hit some shots, keep defenses honest, because he's a pretty good ball handler and a pretty good passer, but you can just sag right off him on defense because he's been such a bad shooter for his whole career. And they're really going to need him to be able to make his open three-pointers. That's it. Just the three-pointers, when they leave you open, you got to be able to make them.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're not really missing any of the guys who left the Hornets so much. So does that mean you're feeling fairly optimistic for this team this year, that they'll have no problems, or they'll probably be back in the playoffs and similar, you know, like mid-40s, maybe upper-40s wins?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think, if health allows it, I see a better roster on paper, but I also see a few guys, specifically Marvin, who probably aren't going to have career seasons this year. So, you have to hedge the two. Cody Zeller and Frank Kaminsky should be better this year. It would be a huge benefit to them if Kaminsky could take more of that power forward role and be a better offensive player than he was, frankly, last year, because he's not going to be as good defensively as Marvin, and that's what they need Marvin for. But if he can come out and shoot 35% on threes, like he's definitely capable of, I think that he would be a really big addition off their bench in sort of a year one of becoming a very valuable player to this franchise. I'll be blunt, to go back and look again at a revisionist history, I would not have picked him number 9 overall ahead of Justice Winslow. And I would not have turned down the trade offers that the Celtics reportedly made.
Right.
But they still like Frank Kaminsky, and Frank could be this team's starting power forward or even starting center next season. And seeing the development out of him there will really be important to hedge the likely slip from Marvin Williams.
Yeah, I agree. When I look at the roster, I definitely think like Kaminsky, you obviously need health for Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, but then Kaminsky's the guy on the bench where his development is going to be so crucial in them winning a playoff series. Like if they make the playoffs, they're going to need offense from him. Hopefully he's going to shoot a little better. And you think he will. Like a lot of, I feel like a lot of big guys in their second year, they've gotten a little more accustomed to the three-point distance.
One thing I think is interesting is if you look at their bench unit, it's so for people unfamiliar, it's Ramon Sessions, Marco Bellinelli, who will probably play both wing positions, Frank Kaminsky, and Roy Hibbert. And none of those guys had good seasons last year. None of them.
Yeah.
But they're all talented players. And if you believe in the mystique that Steve Clifford and Rich Cho have tried to set up, the mystique that they coaxed career seasons out of Jeremy Lin, out of Marvin Williams, out of Nicholas Batum, they got those guys all paid a lot more money because of it. If you think that that's real and that this coaching staff and organization are simply good at maximizing players, suddenly, you know, Roy Hibbert probably takes the start. If Roy can find anywhere near what he was in Indiana, he probably takes the starting job. He might start the season as a starter, but I expect Cody Zeller to outplay him personally. But there's a good chance that Roy takes the starting job, and there's a good chance that Bellinelli's back up at 38% shooting from three. And if that happens and Ramon Sessions can get to the basket with regularity, you've suddenly actually got a pretty good bench if Kaminsky takes the step forward they expect.
Right. Here's a question from a Hornets fan about a person we haven't mentioned. I feel like if Michael Kidd-Gilchrist ends up missing some time, which has unfortunately been the routine, they're going to need some more minutes on the wing. And Jeremy Lamb last year was in and out of the lineup, and you know he didn't really get a play at all in the playoffs. So the question from the listener was, what's the deal with Jeremy Lamb's minutes?
Yeah, Jeremy Lamb had a very weird season last year, and he started the season. Let me just put it this way. The reason Jeremy Lamb has spent his whole career on the bench is because mostly because of defense and toughness. He's very skinny, and he struggled to keep pace with the NBA at first, and basically got pushed around a lot. So if you look at Jeremy Lamb's season last year, for the month of November, there were people talking about Jeremy Lamb as breakout player of the year or most improved player in the whole NBA.
Yeah.
He averaged 13 points and 5 rebounds a game and shot 52% from the field. After November, his numbers fell off at an incredible rate, to the point that he was down at around 40-41% for the whole second half. And if you combine that with bad defense, you don't have a player you want to play. But what was really interesting was even before he started playing well, right before the season started, or maybe after one game, they gave him an extension, $7 million a year for 4 years, I believe it was. And so they committed to the idea of Jeremy Lamb at a relatively low price. But what that means, 3 years, $21 million, sorry, starting this season. So they've got him through 2019. They're committed to the idea of giving Jeremy Lamb a shot, but they're not paying him so much that giving him a shot equals guaranteeing him a rotation spot. They would love for Jeremy Lamb to be the guy who even outplays Bellinelli and is that third perimeter player and the guy who they can lean on. But I think he's going to really need to improve his defense above all else, because Steve Clifford has no patience for bad defenders.
Yeah, it did seem like he got yanked away or yanked around because of that. Speaking of perhaps bad defenders, to kind of wrap up, a couple questions. One, as a Grizzlies fan, let me know, what's wrong with Troy Daniels? As in, this is a guy who has incredible offensive shooting statistics, but everywhere he goes, never gets to play, never gets much playing time.
Man, I'm a little stunned that Troy Daniels is listed at 6'4", 205. Because to me, he looks like 6'2",
yeah.
175.
Right, yeah. You saying he's 205 actually really surprised me as well. I wouldn't have bet he was over 200.
Yeah. I pulled up his basketball reference page just to refresh myself on his numbers. He's a great shooter. He's the best shooter on the team pretty much anywhere he goes.
Well, right, yeah.
Probably, if you wanted to talk the 10 best pure shooters in the NBA, Troy Daniels is probably up there.
Yeah.
He is not a very good ball handler. He's not a very good defender. He's got very limited skills beyond shooting in general. And so, you know, he can be a specialist off the bench. He can be a super cheap replacement level fourth or fifth wing player. But he's probably just not good enough to be much more than that, unless you somehow got yourself in a position as a team where all you needed was a shooter. So,
well, I mean, that's been the MO. That's been the Grizzlies. Just find us one shooter. Now everyone's excited, but we're like, that guy doesn't play. He doesn't get on any team. Like he's on teams that desperately need shooters, and they're like, nah, let's play somebody else.
Yep, that's kind of been his career path. But again, he really is a absolutely fantastic shooter. And I remember I asked a few players in the Hornets who the best shooter on the team was, and there's always a few guys who say themselves, no matter what the facts say, but almost every player on the Hornets last year said Troy Daniels was the best shooter.
Well, I think he was second in the NBA in spot up threes behind Steph. So yeah. It's like this guy, he's got good numbers, but again, doesn't get in. All right. Last thing, based on Twitter, it seems like you're a pretty big Chipotle fan. Is that accurate?
I am.
Man, see, I'm a huge Chipotle fan. So I found an article you wrote talking about NBA players loving their Chipotle. In there, you just drop a thing. It was just like kind of thrown away at the end about a Chipotle celebrity card that allows a person a burrito a day. Can you tell me more about this? And is there an application process or anything of that sort?
Apparently Danny Ainge just got one.
I saw that. Yeah.
So basically it's celebrity endorsers. Some really prominent players have, and athletes have, and other celebrities have gotten these. And they usually, the only demand on them is usually that they tweet a picture of it or they post a picture of it on Facebook to sort of serve as advertising. They get these cards and they're given one burrito / bowl / tacos a day for their lives, which just seems so unfair because these people are millionaires.
Yeah.
And well, I'm not a millionaire, and you're probably not a millionaire. So
yeah.
We could use that. You know?
It's him who has more is to be given or something.
Harrison Barnes got a max deal from the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
He doesn't need a Chipotle card.
Oh yeah, the better off you are, the more you get things for free. That's how it works.
That's how it works.
That's pretty good. I feel like you could get it. I feel like you could look into it. I mean, you know,
10,000 Twitter followers. So like,
that's maybe all you gotta do. like tell him you're gonna tweet. I mean, I just had that. I had the chorizo. It's amazing. Like,
the chorizo was pretty good. I was pretty happy with it.
Well, so yeah, I'll say we have a, you know, we do a breakfast gimmick, and man, if they were open for breakfast, I would go get that chorizo. It'd be great. We talk about it all the time. But yeah, I don't. We gotta get a Chipotle card for us. All right. Well, hey, Adi, thanks so much for making time a second time for us. Can you tell people where they can read your stuff?
Yeah, you can read my stuff at sportingnews.com, or if you just want to see my articles only, you can go to facebook.com/AdiJosephNBA, all one word. And if you want to actually read my tweets, which are usually just stupid jokes and burrito references, you can follow me at Adi Joseph.
Yeah, that's what Twitter's for. So you guys, follow Adi at Adi Joseph. All right, thanks, Adi. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks again to Adi for being a great guest. Thanks, you guys, for listening. Remember, write us some iTunes reviews to be entered to win Fan Essentials gear. Follow us on Twitter at FastBreakBreak. Like us on Facebook. Stay tuned for news about Rabble.tv, the watch parties, the Fantasy League, all kinds of fun that is coming up with the season. Okay, thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.